This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Here's this play I'm talking about. Just good hustle. What is Kevin Love doing?
He's just batting it.
My goodness.
Yeah, just
that's hot.
Bogey fell down. Ball hit him. It goes out of bounds. And he's smiling about it, too.
A three.
He tripped when he tried to fan out to the corner. I'm glad he didn't hurt himself. The way that leg right off the noggin.
Comes Steph. These scattered situations.
He shot the lights out.
The Pelicans trying to turn. That's a different way to defend Curry right there, is turn the power off when the Warriors have the ball.
Lights out. Wow. That's crazy.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. As we are now moving on to the second round / conference semifinals / the games that's where teams actually start to be taking the playoffs seriously, depending on what their first round matchups were. Even though some of the first round matchups were really interesting. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, I did want to ask you this. All that talk about the play-in, and look where they're all at. They're all gone.
Gee, what a shock. And if there is background noise, I am part of my outdoor series where...
I thought you were celebrating the fact that Brad Stevens is no longer the head coach of the Boston Celtics.
We will get into that much, much later. But the way thing is, there's a birthday party going on next door. And I am outside currently, so it's just going to be one of those episodes. But what a shock. Bad teams are gone. Now we're going to talk for real about the real teams that we expect. The first round is just sort of, you know, it's like the, you sort of get excited like, oh, hey, can the 8 seed get a game? But it's not like, oh, I really want to see Washington, you know, they have a chance or anything, but...
Oh, God, yeah. Obviously, the play-in, the whole point is you're securing the 8 seed and the 7 seed. Well, you're playing a 2 and a 1. One seeds have lost to 8 seeds. Some of them because of fluky injuries and stuff. But we knew that Philadelphia wasn't going to lose. We knew Utah was going to take care of business with Memphis. We'll talk about those teams as we go to the series when we go to our playoff previews here, but bear with me. Like the 2 and the 7 was fairly interesting with the West side, because even though the Lakers were a 7 seed, they were still the defending champions on paper. So you wanted to say to yourself, man, you know, if LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy and they get everything right, you know, and they were up 2-1 in that series. And then the injury bug hit Anthony Davis again with his hamstring. And that pretty much did him in, you know.
That did him in. And one of those things like, we don't bet LeBron against LeBron and AD. Okay, AD's out. Well, can LeBron handle it with a bunch
LeBron
of garbage
now? LeBron
was
not 100% either.
Oh, yeah, he was worn out. And also, like, you know, without AD, who's on your roster that's going to be your back to old school Cleveland? And it's just like, yeah, they're not threatening anybody. So it's one of those things like, yeah, the long season last year and worn down. Just, yeah, the injury, like, you know, they were competitive. They probably would have won. And Nelson, AD goes down immediately. That team is just terrible. So
right,
it is what it is. So who do we have? Let's just start with the West right now. So since you talked about Phoenix and LA.
Mm-hmm. So we could talk about Phoenix, who's the 2 seed here, then, because they're going to be moving on. They're going to be playing the Denver Nuggets. Denver had a really nice competitive 6-game series against the Portland Trailblazers. I think everyone knew going into that, regardless of the seedings, that was one where people knew, man, Damian Lillard is going to go down swinging. And he did. Like, he had a couple of monster games. The game 5 that they actually lost in Denver, Damian Lillard went insane, 55 points, 12 made threes. Just, it seemed like he couldn't miss. The game went to double overtime. Denver won it, and then the Nuggets were able to close it out. Jokic had a great game. Michael Porter Jr. had a great game in that one. We'll discuss Portland another time. We just don't have the opportunity now.
We'll get to their postmortem, but shockingly, didn't go seven. We would have put good money that it would have gone seven.
Yeah, the Denver Nuggets, like, they make a habit out of it. You know? I mean, and let me tell you, like, if you watch the third quarter of that Portland game, and it's in Portland, I know that generally the capacities have been fluctuating from place to place, especially if you go East Coast or West Coast. Like, you know, Adam, like, off topic, like, I'm looking at Staples, and it looks like a tomb. Like, it's like there is like nobody there. I can hear the fans. There's energy, but it's not the same energy as like when Boston, despite getting, you know, waxed by the Nets, like they had full capacity for game four almost. The Knicks, everybody knows about that. You know how there was a lot of publicity about how the Garden seemed to fill up and had a pretty rowdy crowd. But the West Coast, man, it like Portland, they had a capacity there. I just didn't feel the energy, you know, or am I reading too much into it?
I think you're reading too much into it. Now let's just get to Denver and Phoenix. Okay. Now this is an interesting matchup, don't you think? Because now, you know, the loss of Jamal Murray still hurts and will throughout the series, but you have Aaron Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Gordon can run around with Devin Booker, and he can, and who's going to stop that front court? Ayton's, you know, Jokic could bring out Ayton, and there's nobody big down in Phoenix to take out, you know, Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, I think you hit on the key portion of the whole series, really, is going to be down to. Now, DeAndre Ayton played very, very well against the Lakers in that series in the first round. I mean, he averaged a double-double in the regular season. It's nothing new. You know, some people get lost in the fact that he was, like, the number one pick, and Trae Young and Luka Doncic were picked after him. But, I mean, all things considered, Ayton has been a huge plus for Phoenix as they have gone along. In the pick and roll, because even though he's a traditional big, he does have decent feet. He's a good shot blocker. Is he going to be able to just move around, especially when Jokic does that thing that he's so amazing at, when he posts up or pinches post, and he does that ball fake off of like a fake dribble handoff, and then he just starts finding open guys, curling, going to the corner. Like, is Ayton going to be ready for that? Especially, and then Jokic can just step away and just hit that real halo of a shot, and, you know, that's going to really, like, that's going to be a challenge for Ayton. So, like, that's going to be the big problem there. The other problem, though, is, like, you know, they don't really have a true point guard. They're, like, going with Austin Rivers. We still don't even know when Will Barton's coming back.
Yeah, but Jokic is their point guard.
You know, he's the point center, kind of.
He's the one who's, everything's running around. So, you know, Austin Rivers has been serviceable. And
he has. And now I will say they do have traditional point guards who are pretty efficient in different ways. Campazzo is a good passer, and he can play some defense. Monte Morris is just one of those guys that's got a high assist to turnover ratio, but he's not otherworldly good. He's not one of those guys. He's obviously not a Jamal Murray who can just take over a game in the pick and roll. But they have guys that can stand in place. You know, Chris Paul for the Phoenix, to flip on that, he got injured in the Lakers series. I don't know exactly what it was. It looks like a shoulder injury. And he had some pretty pedestrian numbers in the early portion of that series after the injury. And then he started playing a little bit better as the series went along. The big elephant in the room with Phoenix, and who you really got to stop, is Devin Booker.
Yeah, you just can't let him get hot. So with that being said, who do you got? Want me just to start? I'll say Denver in six.
You'll say Denver?
I'll say Denver.
Denver in six? You're making a habit out of it. You're saying Denver's not going to go seven games twice in a row?
No, I think Denver will close it out in Denver.
Well, okay. My problem with Denver is that even though Jokic can control the whole game, and they play slow because of the fact that when Jokic is your point man, you want to let him kind of catch up so that he can, you know, find openings and kind of let it play itself out. The Suns play kind of slow too, because of the fact that they have Paul and they have Crowder, along with a lot of the younger guys like Mikal Bridges and Booker. I think Booker is gonna go off, and I think what they're gonna do is they're gonna put Mikal Bridges on Michael Porter Jr. and try to throw some water on him. I'll say Phoenix wins in six. Okay. I got the Suns winning in six, and I, you know, and they both got good challenges. Like the Suns beating the Lakers, even though it was a two beating a seven, it's still the Lakers. It's still LeBron James. Like it is such a mental hurdle to jump over to eliminate him, especially in the first round, because LeBron has never been eliminated in the first round, and they did it. And then Denver beat Portland, who knocked them out 2 years ago.
Denver beat a full team playing good. Mm-hmm. Phoenix beat down a broken down team who backed into everything. So
yeah, but that doesn't delegitimize Phoenix's record. I mean, they were a good team. And now we're moving on to the next series in the Western Conference, and that is the one-seeded Utah Jazz, who just, even though they had that one little scary part where Donovan Mitchell was a DNP, or as I'd like to call it, a healthy scratch. I guess Utah's management was sort of like feeling themselves to say, maybe we could get one against the Grizzlies without Mitchell, and they didn't. They lost. And then Spider comes back, and then they easily win the next four games. So you got any comment on that one?
No, as expected. And then LA decided to show up finally, and then now we have a Clippers-Utah final. So,
yeah, but did you find it weird how LA was almost rope-a-doping all the way to the end? Like, even when they lost the first two, they lost their first two games in the Staples Center. You know, so they're going to Dallas down 0-2, and they're like, "No, we're not nervous yet, or you know, we feel confident, or we're not panicking." That kind of commentary that you're getting, and it's like, I know it's player talk. I know it's something where you don't want to like freak your teammates out, but it's like, you really need to get going. And it just didn't feel like every time it seemed like they had the opportunity to, you know, put the foot on the gas pedal, they didn't until the very end when Kawhi went bananas.
Just very, very strange. But
it was a weird series.
I'm going to say, here's an unpopular opinion I'm just going to lead out with. Is the Clippers the extreme we played to our competition thing? And am I going to be like, maybe we have an upset here?
Well, wait a minute. So you're saying Utah beating the Clippers would be an upset?
No, I'm saying the Clippers think they could upset Utah.
Oh, well, sure. Like I think the Clippers could actually do it. You know, I think that you can't tell me that all that stuff. Now, Utah and LA both blew 3-1 series leads to the same team, the Nuggets. Now they're up against each other. I do think, though, for the Clippers, it haunts them because of the way they went out. You know, Utah they fell on their sword. You know, like Don Mitchell scored as many points as he possibly could. Jamal Murray just scored a few more, and they had Jokic too.
Yeah, and the Clippers just went,
especially Paul George, they just went anemic against the Nuggets. Like it just seemed like they could not make any plays down the stretch of any of those games to close it out. You know, they were able to pull it off with Dallas, but it almost seemed like a growing stage for the Clippers. Like, you know, you almost get this feeling like when you see Kawhi and you see Paul George and you see a lot of the, you know, experienced players that are on the Clipper team, Rajon Rondo now, that they're like, well, we know what to do in this situation. And, you know, not, you know, Adam, this is such a like a misnomer. Like, not all teams are the same. Just because you have veterans and you have guys that have been through the thick of it doesn't mean that if you put a different variation of them together that they just know how to do it and they can snap into place and flip the switch. That's not how it works. You got to have attrition. You have got to have a challenge. And Dallas was a challenge for them. Was it a good challenge? I don't know, because I don't know how good Dallas really is.
I've been saying the whole time Dallas is not very good, and the fact that they had to scrape by to get past them is but the thing might be, you know, you have Paul George, you have Kawhi. They should know, all right, now we need to turn it on. So we've been agreeing way too much in the first round. I believe we were all in unison. So I'm going to go Clippers in seven.
You're going to go Clippers 7. The thing that's interesting here is that I'm not sure about Serge Ibaka's situation. I don't know if it's an injury. I don't know if it's just a matchup problem that they had with the Mavs. But you're going to definitely see more Zubac, maybe Ibaka. You might – I hate to say this. You might even see DeMarcus Cousins, because you got to have a little bit of size to go in there against Rudy Gobert. The problem with Utah is what they figured out is that when you have a big man like that and teams try to go big on you, you can stretch them really easy for threes. And Utah is the best 3-point shooting team in the league in terms of how many makes. Like they had a couple of games against Memphis where they just drop bombs from three from guys like Bogdanovich and Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson and Mitchell. It was like avalanche.
You put Kawhi and George and have them play the mid-range game and try to draw some fouls.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. The Clippers are probably the best team in the league at making tough shots. Very good. You know, Reggie Jackson, do you think he's going to start, or do you think they'll throw Patrick Beverley in there?
I think Beverley just for the defense.
Yeah, but if Donovan Mitchell goes off on him, like, what are you going to do?
It's one of those, maybe you let Mitchell go off and stop everybody else.
You know, you can't put Batum on Mitchell. Batum plays the five, and they're small ball.
No, that's what you let Mitchell go off, and then you just have mismatches everywhere else. You go for the size game, mm-hmm. and then you just try to go inside, get some fouls. I'm going to say again, Clippers in seven. I know you're going Utah, so what do you have?
I like Utah in seven.
Okay,
I actually think this is one where the home court matters.
And that's why I think that's why the reason I'm saying the exact opposite is the Clippers, I'm sorry, don't care about home court advantage and seem to be terrible at home. So maybe mm-hmm. being away from the tomb of the Garden might be, I mean.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, being Garden. A road warrior is really going to help you in the playoffs.
Yeah, tomb of the Staples Center, not the Garden. but okay, so, you know, we just for variety's sake, you know, but we both agree game seven.
Yes.
All right, the Place to Be Nation Pop Experience has a bunch of shows for you to watch. On the latest Blockbuster Rewind, the 12th episode, co-hosts Eric Ells and Scott Shiflett are joined by Scott Criscullo and Jennifer Smith as they discuss the first four films of the long-running Friday the 13th franchise. Andrew, what do you think about that? Oh, wait, it's just me doing the reads today. Oh, he's on vacation, so... Oh, no commentary today. It Was a Thing on TV brings you a special pair of live shows from the PTVN Experience. First, Press Your Luck is back on this season, just like last year. We're doing a special live show for the start of season three. Press Your Luck was one of the better game shows. It was fun. Battlestar in the 25th Century. Sonic Scott watched Battlestar Galactica Episode 6. Hot Goes the Classics. Going to 1967's The Jungle Book. Pop Goes the Couch is still going for the Mighty Ducks, Season 1. And Making Mount Rushmore, talking about summertime songs and road trip songs. Summertime songs definitely have to go with Len, Steal My Sunshine, Brand Van 3000, Drinking in L.A., Typo Negative Summer Breeze, you know, classic stuff. All right, that's all I got today. It's just me, usually. The awkward banter is what makes this. But, you know, rate, subscribe, review. They got a lot of shows here. Wrestling Feed, Justin and Scott also doing their thing. So, Place Be Nation, give it a look. Back to the show.
And we're back as the party continues. And Adam Murray did not invite me to the party, but it's okay because we're together again, just like we are with the listeners.
I wasn't invited either.
So you were just the extra arm around the shoulder.
I'm just watching creepily from my porch at the neighbors and their party. So
yeah, don't worry. There's a whole lot of other people sitting at home now. after these playoffs, you know, yeah, you start with eight. Now you're down to you start with 16, right? Now you know, I'm not good at math.
We've established. Let's just.
I think we're down to eight. But. For real, let's get to the Eastern Conference portion of this. You know, just like the West, with the fact that we're going to be guaranteed a new Western Conference champion, we're going to have a new Eastern Conference champion because of the Miami Heat being bounced. Not only that, Adam, I was looking into it, and with the four teams left, the last team to make the NBA Finals from this crop was actually the Nets in 2003 when they were the New Jersey Nets with Jason Kidd. How crazy is that?
And also, it's like the three teams with the largest payrolls, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, especially the one we're about to talk about, the Philadelphia 76ers. you know, they, I didn't really find, I hate to gloss over it. I didn't find anything terribly interesting about the Wizards series where they beat him in five, except for the fact that Joel Embiid went out with some knee soreness in game four.
When it then looked that's like- why, yeah, that's why it went five. But other than that, you know, they, yeah. Okay, now that we're talking for real here, they did simplify by shipping out some of their extra pieces. And, you know, Seth Curry isn't really, and Danny Green, they're
he went for 30 points in the clincher against the Wizards.
Yeah, they decided to get some complimentary pieces as opposed to let's just get big names. And, okay, so with that said, we have Atlanta. How is this not going 4 or 5?
Oh, so you're already on that bandwagon. Oh, I think...
You think Atlanta's going to surprise them?
I think it can be competitive. Now, let me say this. The thing that's interesting is that we were just talking in the previous segment about how you see a lot of these wonkier lineups and these teams that sort of match up and they're one is great in one, you know, one position, one's got a point center and the other's got, you know, like 3 point guards. Like, this is a situation where it doesn't it feel like that it's more of a standard matchup versus this guy versus this guy, positional type of series. I don't feel like it's too drastic. The only thing that's really interesting is that Trae Young was just lethal against the New York Knicks. He wasn't super efficient, but he made huge plays. And I mean, that's something that he was able to do in Atlanta anyway. They just weren't winning yet. Now that they're winning and now that they're moving in the playoffs, now people are on a national level noticing Trae Young. And I just wonder what they're going to be able to do, because Ben Simmons is I don't know why I stressed Ben's name like that. That was weird. But Ben Simmons, like there's another Simmons out there. But Ben Simmons, he's the point guard for Philadelphia, and he's not going to be guarding Trae Young, and Trae Young's not going to be guarding him. So what do you do there?
You just sort of, you know, Trae Young can't really play defense anyways, so it doesn't really matter who he's matched up against, because they're going to just score on
better.
Him.
He's a good steals guy.
He tries to jump it too much because he can't play, you know, one-on-one, so.
Yeah. He lays off his man a lot, too.
Simmons
is a really good defender.
You have, you know, the young wings. You have, I mean, in Hurt Horder and...
Kevin Werter and DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah.
Now, DeAndre Hunter played really good defense in the Knicks series. Now,
the Knicks. The Knicks are a good team.
Look, I kind of had a feeling that the Knicks offense was going to go kaput. I just didn't think it would happen against the Hawks. I predicted the Hawks would win because their offense was better.
No,
but
we predicted the Hawks would win because you know, it was two bad teams. Yeah. So now that we have two bad teams, one of the bad teams going against a good team, explain to me how this will go six.
Well, I think DeAndre Hunter, like I was trying to say, DeAndre Hunter, I think, is going to wind up guarding Simmons. So that leaves John Collins with Tobias Harris. I think that is a terrible matchup for John Collins. He cannot guard Tobias Harris. So that's one where that is just an easy check mark for Philly. It really depends on Embiid and how much rest he gets. Let me ask you this, because you're pretty confident in Philadelphia at this point. Do you think that they can rest Joel Embiid for more than one game and still win the series?
Yeah, easily.
So you think that Philly is in that luxury mode where if they sat their best player, they could still beat another playoff opponent? Because even the Utah Jazz couldn't do that without Donovan Mitchell against a lowly Grizzly team. And I hate to say it, but because they did win 2 play-in games, but the Grizzlies were lowly. They were an 8 seed.
But that was just – that's a completely different thing. This is just – this is, they beat the Wizards. It wasn't much of a matchup. And then now you have, now you have, again, Atlanta's not a good team. They're a young team. This was like Denver when they first, a couple years ago started to, you know, we just made the playoffs. We don't know what we're doing. Oh, well, we're in the second round. No, it doesn't mean you're good. It just means you beat a worse first round team. Mm-hmm. So.
What do you think of the idea of Matisse Thybulle guarding Trae Young? Do you think that can work, or will it be Danny Green?
Probably be a rotating thing. Mm-hmm. If Trae starts going off, okay, we'll move somebody else onto him. Even move Curry onto Green.
I think the biggest I think the biggest key to it is, like, you know, I actually heard Draymond Green, because he's working for TNT for the playoff coverage. He made a great point. It really looks – it's all about how Trae Young does in that pick and roll, you know, if when Embiid sinks. The problem is, like I was talking about traditional matchups, you know, the Hawks center's Clint Capella. You know, he's going to have trouble with Embiid. I mean, everybody does, but especially Capella. And if he's in foul trouble and they got to sink down and they got to use, like Bruno Fernando or Solomon Hill, now you got problems. You know, the other guy who really has to step up for Atlanta, and he really only had one good game in the Knicks series, is Danilo Gallinari. And I don't know if he's going to go off either, because I think Harris is going to be matched up with him a lot. And Harris is a good two-way player too.
So then who you got?
I got the Sixers at 5.
I think you had this big, huge thing saying, I'm going too fast. Like, how is it not going
to
go 5
of your
life?
I have to string you along for the big reveal, Adam. That's how the show works.
You could picture the hardest eye roll right now.
You want to hear one cool stat before we before we go to the next one? This is the first time that they've matched up in the playoffs, the Hawks and the Sixers, since 1982. That's crazy, isn't it?
Not Atlanta. They've led two different paths, pretty much. So it wasn't.
Yeah, but even like Donovan Barkley, and then the Al Horford teams, and then you had that stretch with Allen Iverson, and they never matched up. How weird is that?
Well, now they are, and here we are.
Yes, and here we are for the next one, and this is the one I think in terms of the national hype is sort of. It was also the one that was penciled in the quickest, because Milwaukee just absolutely ran roughshod over the Miami Heat and almost felt like revenge for eliminating them in the bubble. But now they're going to face off against the big three of the Brooklyn Nets, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, James Harden. They made pretty quick work of the Boston Celtics.
This is what I think people want in the finals. Like the NBA finals.
Can we move
it around? Like, oh no, this is the championship match right here.
You remember in 07 with the Suns and the Spurs, kind of like that? Where people knew the winner of that series was going to win the finals. Because Dallas got knocked out by the Warriors.
So yeah, this is an interesting matchup. And this is, I don't know. Should we just move straight ahead and say there's going to be a game 7 on this? Because it's just going to be back and forth. Or do you see somebody really pulling out ahead? Like, if somebody gets two quick games, it might be over.
Okay. Here's the thing that I worry about is that every time – now, there are exceptions where you have a series with a lot of national hype that you go into, and it does meet the hype. Lakers-Kings in 2002. The Raptors played the Sixers in 2019. That was a really good series that went 7, and it was very close. I'm sure there's others that I'm missing. But when – you know, we saw this before with Milwaukee and Boston in 2019, where everybody was hyped, and Milwaukee just easily beat them after game 1. And I'm not saying that's exactly what's going to happen. I'm not saying that Milwaukee's going to beat Brooklyn in 5. I just get the sense like there will, like you were trying to allude to, there will be some sort of matchup exploitation that one of those teams is just not going to have an answer for. I would make the bet that it's Brooklyn that gets the advantage with one of their big three over Milwaukee. However, these are the two best offenses in the league. And they play pretty fast, so you're going to see some real up and down crazy scores, I would say, for these games. Now, Giannis went off in the regular season every time that they played. They actually played back-to-back games near the end of the regular season, and Giannis and Durant sort of got caught up in a shootout, but Harden wasn't in those games. Now you got Harden. And, you know, for Bryn Forbes, who's a great three-point shooter, the Nets have Joe Harris. Dante DiVincenzo is out. So now that means you got to play like Pat Connaughton and, you know, maybe a couple of other guys. The Nets aren't very thin, or the Nets have a really thin roster too after they're starting. So what I'm trying to kind of bounce around with is that they're very similar rosters. They're very similar rosters.
So this is do you think Brooklyn has the advantage because they have the home court?
No, I think Brooklyn has the advantage because their star power in the top three tier is better than Milwaukee's. Now, Milwaukee, adding Drew Holiday was a plus. I think everybody in the world would agree with that after watching what they did to the Heat. Would you agree? Over to Eric Bledsoe?
Oh, yeah, of course. It was an upgrade. But I think the worry for Milwaukee is they just fall apart and revert to their old, let's just give it to Giannis for 22 seconds and hope he does something.
Yeah, they you know, like I was saying during the regular season, I felt like Milwaukee did a better job, or Mike Budenholzer did a better job of keeping his cards closer to the vest. Because Budenholzer has always been accused, because he was from the Spurs, Greg Popovich coaching tree, of like, we run the system works, don't betray the system. And that kind of got him against the Raptors, and it definitely got him in the bubble against the Heat, where the Heat just basically built a defensive wall against Giannis in the paint, and they just kept running through it and not adjusting. I feel like this team has morphed a little bit more. They got a little bit more of like a their game plan switches up a little bit more, and they their three-point shooting has a more pop to it. The problem I keep going to, Adam, is just – and even Milwaukee's got a better defense if you look at the metrics. The problem I have is just, can Milwaukee stop all – or – stymie all three of their stars? And my answer is no. I don't think they can do it. So I'll say Brooklyn wins in seven games. That would make it a home win for Brooklyn. So I would say Brooklyn wins in seven.
I will agree with you.
I know. How weird is that? So if, as we go by, did we disagree on too many of them? Or
no, we just have our storyline. No. We say this is finally where real basketball is coming up.
Yep.
So.
All right. I hate to make it like a lazy Sunday like this, but it's like, you know, I mean, it was good to watch playoff basketball in the environment that you're familiar with.
I'm Adam Murray for Andrew Reich. Enjoy the second round.